So how much is enough money? Numerous studies show that most people, regardless of their level of income, answer the question about the same way, really. We need about 10% more to feel comfortable. 10% will make the difference. Whether we earn $30,000 or $60,000 or $250,000 or $1 million, 10% more ought to do it. When people are asked the same question, actually, over time, Loyola Marymount University professor Christopher Kaxor reports, when they do get that 10%, which typically happens over the course of a few years, they want another 10%, and so on ad infinitum. One British psychoanalyst said, "By its very nature, greed is endless and never assuaged. It ceases only with death." Greed. We all hate greed. We all recognize it's bad. But most often we refuse to admit that we're greedy. Somebody else's problem, we can see it in others. What is greed? Greed is the pursuit of more. More than we need, as demonstrated in our discontentment with what we have. That's what greed is. So, it doesn't matter how much you have. Rich people can be greedy, and that's who we usually point to when we think of greed, as rich people. But quite frankly, poor people can be just as greedy, if not more greedy. Whether you have much or you have little, greed is an attitude that kills the soul. And Jesus talks about that in Luke chapter 12. And he says that greed neglects the soul to indulge ourselves. Luke chapter 12, verse 13, where we begin. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" Then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." So the pursuit of more is never satisfied. And Jesus warns us not to live to pursue more, live to pursue God. We can accumulate possessions while neglecting our souls. We can have a full bank account with empty souls. Soul care is about our relationship with God. Do we cultivate that relationship with God? Are we growing rich toward God? So Jesus tells us in these verses, first of all, to guard against greed. See, here's a man who demanded that Jesus tell his brother to share the family inheritance. He didn't ask Jesus. It was common, by the way, to go to rabbis to ask them to address issues within a family, teachers. But he didn't ask Jesus to address the issue, did he? He asked Jesus, he actually demanded of Jesus that he make his brother give him the family inheritance. He wanted it. He demanded Jesus get it for him. Family squabbles about money are as low as it gets, really. It surprises me, it shouldn't, I suppose, but it surprises me how quickly families can degenerate into fighting about possessions. Sad. Some family members even start marking out what they want before the person dies. "I want this, I want that. Put the tag on this, that's mine." I've seen a family fight about the estate go so bad that family members end up refusing to talk to one another for years. So he wants Jesus to set it all straight and give him what he wants. And Jesus says, "That's not my deal. I'm not doing that. But beware the dragon of greed. As always, Jesus goes to the heart. It will consume you. Be on guard. The Greek construction for be on guard is in a form that stresses guarding ourselves, protecting ourselves from greed. The word was used for military duty. We are to protect ourselves from greed with the vigilance of a sentry at an army encampment. See, greed is always trying to infiltrate our lives with its explosive devices. And we have to guard against greed at all times. Every single one of us is prone to greed. Greed will always try to infiltrate, and you have to see the warning signs so you know what's coming and you're prepared and you can fight against it. I learned a long time ago, for example, that it was not a good idea for me to examine these reports that come out in your professions, I'm sure, but they come out in pastoral profession too, you know, all these reports about what pastors make elsewhere in the country. It's kind of curious, but it began to stimulate in me a covetousness, seeing that. And I learned it was better just don't read that stuff and start comparison shopping and everything else. It isn't worth it, because we have to guard against any kind of the beginning of any kind of greed in our lives. Protecting our possessions can also become a way that greed infiltrates our lives. So we become very protective. This is mine. I'm going to protect it at all costs. And that also is a form of greed. Tuesday, September 8th, 2015, a British Airways jet caught fire at the Las Vegas airport. Smoke is billowing out, a catastrophic engine failure. As the plane bursts into smoke and flames, observers saw something rather startling. People were stopping during their evacuation to grab their bags before they left the plane. Now, authorities are certainly concerned about a plane that is erupting into flames, but they're also worried that we'd risk our lives for carry-on baggage. So what's the big deal with, you know, so big deal, grab my carry-on bag and leave? Well, the FAA requires planes to be evacuated in 90 seconds. That's how long they expect that a plane will be totally evacuated. But as a Chicago-based air traffic controller wrote, let's say the average delay time per bag is just 5 seconds. Now, that's pretty fast getting your bag out of one of those compartments, but let's say it's just 5 seconds, and half of the people, half of the 170 people on board that flight 2276 took the time to take their bag, the evacuation would have taken an additional 7 minutes. Can you imagine being the last person getting off the plane because everybody had to grab their bags? One veteran pilot with a major U.S. airline said, "We're always shaking our head. It doesn't matter what you say. People are going to do what they do." That's the truth. People do what they want to do. It doesn't matter what you say. Or, as one blogger summarized this news story, people love their carry-ons more than life itself. Possessions. Jesus tells us that life does not consist of possessions. That's not what life is. The most successful person is not the one who has the most toys. Don't look at what others have, because greed will infiltrate your soul. You'll want more. Don't let your possessions become more important than your soul, Jesus says. Guard against greed. Fight it. And secondly, grow rich toward God. Verse 16, And he told them in a parable, saying, the land of a rich man was very productive, and he began reasoning to himself, saying, what shall I do since I have no place to store my crops? Then he said, this is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all of my grain and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, you fool! This very night your soul is required of you, and now who will own what you have prepared? So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God, is not rich toward God. We're to grow rich toward God. The rich man was a fool. And he was a fool not because he had lots of possessions. Being wealthy doesn't make you a fool. The rich man was a fool because he put his trust and his faith in those possessions. He thought he would be happy because he was rich. In their book, Happy Money, The Science of Happier Spending, researchers Dunn and Norton provide five principles they call happy money. Of course, money can't buy happiness, but it certainly can be more advisably spent, we'll say. Based on their research, here are the five principles of happy money. Number one, buy experiences, not just things. We can find happiness in experience, but we are often disappointed when shortly after we get that new car or whatever, that thing. Number two, make it a treat. Having a house full of chocolate bars is a good way to lose the joy of chocolate. But anticipating a special chocolate treat makes your money go a long way. Number three, buy time. We are time-poor people, so slow down, avoid expenditures that devour time. Number four, pay now, consume later. That's the reverse, of course, of the common order of consuming now, paying later. But you will find greater joy when you do it the other way around. Number five, invest in others. There's the key. Invest in others. Whether we give to friends and family or make charitable donations, studies show most people find more happiness in sharing than in spending on themselves. Invest in others. Jesus talks about this fool who was gathering for himself. And someone has said that this story of the rich fool is the only place in the Bible that talks about retirement. Our traditional American view of retirement is that you work hard all your life, and then you retire, and you enjoy the fruits of all your labors. Jesus calls that person a, what is it? Fool. That person's a fool. It's totally unbiblical. Yes, of course, we retire from a career, but our souls don't retire from life. Life is not the pursuit of pleasure. Life is the pursuit of God. So many times I've watched and listened to people look forward to retirement so that they can do all of these wonderful things. And then the person retires and something happens. Health. Spouse dies. Problems arise. And they never end up doing all of those things they dreamed of doing in this life. If we concentrate on the material pleasures, we miss out on real life. And real life is always about the soul. Notice how Jesus ends the whole section, this whole story about this rich fool who cared more about his material possessions than he did his soul. He says that the fool stores up treasures for himself, but he is not rich toward God. How do you get rich toward God? By doing soul stuff. By doing God's stuff. By investing your energy and gifts and time and money in eternal priorities, in soul priorities. You can store up riches with God this way. What are those things in your life? Not even things, but what are those opportunities you have in life to invest in soul matters, in eternal matters, in God matters? Maybe it's your family, and you're investing in them, giving them time and energy. Maybe that means, as we chose a number of years ago, that you don't work full-time as a wife or a mother. You want to spend time with your children. Maybe it means other choices, but the bottom line is you're making choices based upon investing yourself in things that matter eternally, and that is souls, that is people, family members. That's who live forever. Things don't. So look for ways to use your skills for Him. In retirement, how you spend your time and energy and resources is a great opportunity to invest them for eternity. You have more choices, but use them for Him. Many of you develop great skills through your years of work. Those same skills are transferable to kingdom work. Invest them. Look for ways to use them. When you do that, you grow rich toward God. Every day of your life, as you invest in His work, you're growing rich toward God, and you won't be a fool. Number two, worry deprives the soul of peace about tomorrow. Worry and greed are actually cut from the same cloth. The source of both worry and greed is unbelief. It is a lack of faith. As the saying goes, greed can never get enough. Worry is the fear that we won't have enough. Jesus says, "Don't be a fool and don't worry." Verse 22. And He said to His disciples, "For this reason I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor for your body as to what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Therefore, this reason, looks back at what He's just said. It's the fool that's greedy, and we are foolish to worry." And it is a command. It's not an option that we can do without as Christians. It is a command to us as Christians. The command is ongoing, continuous, active, always. Now, food and clothing are basic necessities of life. We don't consider these things to be luxuries. But even the necessities of life we're not to worry about, because life is more than food and clothing. Life is more than material living. You say, "Dave, that's easy to say, but I still worry. How do I stop worrying?" Well, He gives us two methods for fighting worry in these verses. The first is, trust God for His provision. He says, "Life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap. They have no storeroom nor barn, and yet God feeds them. How much more valuable you are than the birds? And which of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his lifespan? If then you cannot do even a very little thing, why do you worry about other matters?" So, trust God's provision is the first method to stop worrying, and immediately we say, "Trust, great. Thanks. That's what I have a hard time doing when I'm worrying, is trust." That's it right there. I have a hard time trusting. So just how do we develop trust in God to fight worry? Well, we truth talk to ourselves. We argue with you. Do you ever argue with yourself? Yeah, it's a great technique. argue with yourself, but argue rightly with yourself. Argue biblically with yourself. Truth talk to yourself to fight the worry. Really, any other lie that the devil has brought in that is destroying things. You got to truth talk to yourself. And Jesus truth talks to us in these verses. And he gives us three truths to fight worry. So, truth number one, life is more than earthly needs, verse 23. Even basic needs are not what life is all about. We need to constantly remind ourselves that life is not about the stuff of this life, this earth. Remember that. Tell yourself that whenever you start to worry. We have a forever life. Number two, truth number two, we are more valuable than crows. Or ravens, actually, but crows sounds more impressive here. You're more valuable than any crow. Look at the birds, he says. God takes care of the birds. Why can't he take care of you? So argue with yourself about that. Tell yourself that. Start worrying, so then you say, well, I guess this one's way too big for God to handle. He can't handle this. Really? Of course he can handle it. So truth talk to yourself. Number three, truth number three. We can't add an hour to our lives by worrying. So why worry? Actually, the text says that you can't add a cubit to your height. But it became a metaphor for time and life. It says you can't add a cubit to your height. That's a cubit is from your elbow to your fingertip, usually about 18 inches. You can't add a cubit to your height. You can't make yourself 18 inches taller no matter what you do, so why worry about it? Metaphor, you can't add any time to your life, so why worry about it? You might as well trust God for your height or your life and stop worrying. So what we have to do whenever we're starting to worry, and I have to do this to myself too, you truth talk. You start talking to yourself. It might be 3 o'clock in the morning. The first thing I do when I'm worrying about something is I start telling myself the truths from God's Word. Second thing I do is I pray, obviously. Why? Because that changes the equation. But it's a battle, just like greed is a battle. And you have to fight it. The second method for fighting worry is to seek God's kingdom. Verse 27. Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, but I tell you, not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass in the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he clothe you, you men of little faith? See, it comes back to this issue of faith. And do not seek what you will eat and what you will drink, and do not keep worrying. For all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek, but your Father knows that you need these things. Seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. So, if looking at crows won't help you, trust God, then look at the flowers. Lilies grow, but they can't add a cubit to their height. God does. The lilies that he's talking about here, probably not literal lilies as we talk about them today. They were a reference to some of the bright flowers that bloom in the Judean countryside. The landscape in Judea is very bleak. So how do such beautiful flowers bloom in this bleak landscape? Do they worry about it? Nope. God does it. God takes care of the flowers so God can take care of you. So if you don't want to look at crows, look at flowers and trust God. Martin Luther said that the flowers were our teachers. And he said, thank you, flowers, you who are to be devoured by the cows. God has exalted you very highly that you become our masters and our teachers. That's right. The problem is that we are seeking or pursuing the wrong goals whenever we worry. We seek material needs, we seek things related to life here and now, and as long as we are pursuing the stuff here on earth, we're going to end up worrying. We have to change our focus to stop worrying. We have to start thinking about the kingdom and eternity. Seek His kingdom and let God deal with adding the earthly stuff to your life to meet your needs. So our job is to focus on His kingdom. When we focus on what we want here, we're going to worry. When we focus on His kingdom, then we're going to start trusting Him. Because, Jesus says, God gladly gives you His kingdom. Don't worry about what you don't have. Thank God for what you do have. He gives you the kingdom. So there's nothing to worry about. So He comes first. You seek His kingdom first as a way to fight the worries in our lives. Now, just a quick comment. God doesn't promise to make us wealthy. That's not what this verse is saying. God promises to take care of our needs. The question is, what are our needs? And there we get into the trouble of worry. How much is enough? I mean, worry is the fear that you don't have enough, that you don't have ability to handle the problem. In a series of articles on the nature of greed, Christian blogger Ted Schofield writes, when I ask people what is greed, typically they talk about some rich person who has all sorts of things, and so they're greedy. Greed is when you have too much stuff or place too much importance on stuff. The late comedian George Carlin said, that's the whole meaning of life, isn't it? Trying to find a place for your stuff. That's all your house is, a place to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff. Sometimes you've got to move, you've got to get a bigger house. Why? Too much stuff. Got to get more stuff. That's going to lead to worry every time. By the way, we Americans are not filling our houses with people anymore. Here's an interesting statistic. In 1950, the average home size was 983 square feet and 3.37 people lived in it. I don't know about the 3.37, but by 2009, the average home square footage has ballooned to 2,700 with only 2.57 occupants. In 59 years, the average American home grew by 175%, while the average American family shrunk by 24%. Interesting, isn't it? We got more. We need less. How much is too much? How much is enough? There is the heart of worry. We fear we don't have enough because we don't trust God for what we have and we don't seek His kingdom with our lives. A 2012 Boston Globe article asked the following question, does money change you? Here in the home of the American dream, most people are convinced that gaining a lot of money would never change who I am. Most of us, if we went around the room, would say that, probably. Well, if I got a lot of money, if I won the lottery, it won't change who I am. I'll be the same person. And all of the studies show that it most definitely changes who we are. That rich people have a harder time connecting with others, showing less empathy to the extent of dehumanizing those who are different. They're less charitable, they're less generous, they are less likely to help someone in trouble, more likely to defend the status quo. Money changes us. In fact, Kathleen Vose, a professor at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management, did a study. She and her colleagues found that even the mere suggestion of getting more money, which is a technique called priming in the market world, makes people less friendly, less sensitive to others, and more likely to support statements like some groups of people are simply inferior to others. Oh, it changes us all right. Another series of studies from the University of California, Berkeley, concluded that wealthier people tend to be less compassionate toward others in a bad situation. The article noted that if you win the lottery and you want to avoid becoming an insensitive lout, then there is a very simple solution to avoiding becoming an insensitive lout. Yeah. One of the researchers summarized it: give at least half of the lottery winning away. Well, there's a novel solution. Look what Jesus said, verse 33, as we come to the end of our section. Here's his whole point in all of this. Sell your possessions, give it away, and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near nor moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Look, we miss Jesus' point, though, here quite often, I think, because we often begin to think that he's telling us to get rid of our stuff and live in poverty, to become poor, as if poor people are more spiritual. And that is not at all what Jesus is saying here. Poor people are not more spiritual than rich people. Some people take it like that. You get rid of everything and become poor. But if we all give everything away, then we would all be holy paupers, unable to help anyone else in this life. So that makes no sense at all. That's not Jesus' point. The point is not to make ourselves poor as if by becoming poor we become spiritual. The point is to invest our earthly stuff in kingdom goals, because God gives it to us to use. Author Kent Hughes uses the words divest and invest. And so I put it this way: we divest to invest. The point of getting rid of anything, liquidating it, is so that you can use it and invest it. And all of life is about investing. Randy Alcorn has taught us well: your heart follows your treasure. We think that the opposite, right, sometimes. But it's really that our hearts follow where our treasure goes. If you put your money in houses, you will treasure those houses. And you will pay money, and you will work hard, and you will manage the bigger and better houses that you have. It will take much of your life because that's where you've invested your money. If you put your money in missions, you will treasure missions. The same is true for churches as it is for individuals. Your heart follows your treasure. It goes where you put your money and your energy, your resources. You will value what you invest in. So Jesus is saying, invest wisely in the things that last for eternity, and then your heart will be there. And you won't be greedy and you won't be worrying. The Spanish proverb says, there are no pockets in a shroud. Someone else has said, you've probably heard this one, have you ever seen a hearse pulling a U-Haul trailer? We can't take it with us when we go, and that is very true. But here is a very important spiritual principle from this passage, a kingdom principle you can bank on. You can send it on ahead. Can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Think of it as an exchange rate. Earthly stuff can be invested in heavenly values, and God exchanges the earthly stuff, the earthly currency, for heavenly currency. And our bank account with God grows as we invest in kingdom work. It's an exchange process. You can send it ahead. So think of your life as your investment portfolio. All of life is your investment portfolio, not just money, time, energy, where you spend your resources, invest them. It's your investment portfolio. And there are good and bad investments here on earth, and there are good and bad investments in the kingdom. Be wise about how you invest those resources that God has given you. That's called stewardship. Our investments in heaven are measured by heaven's values. So whatever God values eternally is how he measures the investments we make in his kingdom. So our investments in the kingdom are measured by eternity. Whatever has eternal value is what matters. So you work for what lasts. Invest in what matters to God. And that's the way you pay it ahead for eternity. There's a wonderful story, a little story about a poor rural church in China a few years ago. A group of Christians was in Nanjing, and on Sunday they visited various churches. An older Chinese woman named Mrs. Chang, now living in Los Angeles, had visited China, and she chose to visit a church across the river from the big city of Nanjing. It was a poor church composed of basically subsistence farmers. They didn't have much. But there were a lot of them in the church service. There were 900 in attendance in that Chinese church that Sunday. And they asked to hear a word from the sister from America. So she stood up, and Mrs. Chang brought greetings from her church in Los Angeles. And she told how the Lord had added many to their church, and it was growing, and God was blessing, and they were currently raising funds to build a large new addition for their church building in Los Angeles. After a word of blessing for the church, she took her seat. At the close of the church service, the pastor called Mrs. Chang forward. And the pastor said her words had thrilled their hearts as believers, and they wanted her to have the morning offering that they had collected to help with the new building of their brothers and sisters in Christ back in Los Angeles. And they had collected that Sunday for the church in Los Angeles $140. Not much by our standards, but they understood the kingdom principle of seeking first and investing. Huge by their standards. So the question I have is, what if God measures our giving not by the amount we give, but by the amount we keep and hang on to? All of our resources, not just money, time, energy, gifts, all of those things. What if God measures our investing, our giving, not by the amount we give, but by the amount we keep for ourselves? How do you live your life? That truly shows where our treasure is. And where our treasure is, that's where our hearts will be too. Father, teach us to put our treasure in matters, in things that matter eternally. And take that treasure and use it in this world. And as our hearts focus on your treasure, we know we will do less worrying, we will be less greedy, because we are living for you. And we are seeking first your kingdom, and we are investing in the things that matter to you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.